Together, let's build a free and virtuous society that helps and doesn't hurt.
This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
We're American, greatest country on the planet.
America is already gone. We have seen the globalist preparations.
You can't save America if you won't build the church.
I heartily agree with you, sir.
I have a plan that cannot fail.
Ever.
Build the church, bless the nation.
Let's put it to a vote.
The kingdom of God is not a democracy.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
I relish every moment I have to listen to you now.
I like you already.
My favorite program to be on.
That's such a great question. I'm so glad somebody's asking this.
That's an extremely insightful question, Al.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Good luck for both of our sakes.
Here we go.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Glad to be here. We've got another hour talking about the things that matter most. Sometimes you'll hear me refer to interviews that I did previously in the day because we record. We often record because of having to travel. We actually record interviews earlier in the day. And today, there's a recorded interview that you will hear in this hour of Cresta in the Afternoon sometime in the near future. And it deals with geocentrism, right? Geocentrism is the theory that the Earth is at the center of the universe. Basically, everything revolves around the Earth. We just found out that the particular Catholic apologist has decided to hold that position. And it got me thinking that when, especially for a Catholic, because we don't believe that the Scripture gives us scientific theories as a matter of divine revelation. So when a Catholic finds himself spouting a scientific theory that's in violation of all, virtually all, the scientific authorities in the field, when you're going against the scientific consensus, then you have to say to yourself that you're either in the category of an Einstein or a fool. And I would think that most of us have moments where we're much closer to the fool than we're closer to Einstein. So I take a look at some of these things. I look at the flood geology, for instance, of George McGrady Price, the Seventh-day Adventist flood geologist from the middle 20th century, against the entire geological establishment. I take a look at Ron Wyatt, who did archaeology. He passed away in 1999, claiming 92 different discoveries that he made, none of which are confirmed by the archaeological establishment. And I see this new one dealing with geocentrism. In Catholic circles, this may not be a huge problem, but I can remember when I was an evangelical managing bookstores, it was true that many, many, many evangelical Protestants held to positions that were against consensus science because they thought they had to because it was divinely revealed so. Catholics don't believe that scientific theories are divinely revealed. They're a matter of human natural reason. Now, you say, well, what about Einstein's? I said, well, good. Let's take Fred Hoyle, who's the astronomer who's been behind the steady state theory. The Big Bang theory is the reigning model right now, but Fred Hoyle has maintained for decades the so-called steady state theory. And I would say, well, yes, in a case like that, Fred Hoyle is closer to Einstein than he is to the fool. He's a well-known astronomer who engages his critics, and his critics engage him, and they go back and forth on these things. But nobody goes back and forth with Ron Wyatt about his archaeological finds. No name archaeologist would do it. Same thing with geologists and somebody like Henry Morris or the old George McGrady Price. For a Catholic to go against consensus science generally means that they elevate themselves. They think they've got an insight into reality. Let me just say, you might, but you don't have it because of the Scriptures And you don't have it because of the teaching of the church. Not in this area. We got much coming up today. Dave Armstrong, apologist with us, a new website. We've got some other comments to make about Kathleen Sebelius. But first, the headlines with Nick Tom.
Thank you much, Al. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Monday, April 14th. It is the feast of the commemoration of Blessed Peter Gonzalez. And today's news is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. A Russian jet pilot is accused of trying to provoke a U.S. warship in the Black Sea. White House spokesman Jay Carney confirmed the Pentagon's report that the jet buzzed the USS Donald Cook at a low altitude about a dozen times over the weekend.
The Pentagon has assessed that and called it provocative and unprofessional.
At one point, the jet was within 1,000 feet of the ship. The jet appeared to be unarmed. The missile destroyer is currently docked in Romania. It was deployed to the region in reaction to the rising tensions between Russia and Ukraine. Meanwhile, the unfolding crisis in Ukraine is topping the agenda at a meeting of European foreign ministers in Luxembourg. The European Union's top diplomat, Karen Ashton, says she is very concerned about the confrontations between pro-Russian separatist groups and Ukrainian forces in eastern Ukraine. Saranda Goffman reports.
European foreign ministers are expected to reiterate their support to Ukraine as its military seeks to regain control of eastern cities from pro-Russian gunmen. The Ukrainian government claims Russia is fomenting separatist uprisings and a similar playout of events that saw the peninsula of Crimea fall under Russian control. EU foreign ministers are expected to take steps to stabilize Ukraine, including the signing of a temporary trade agreement, removing customs duties on exports to the EU. Sandra Gottman, Brussels.
The mother of a teenager killed yesterday in a shooting authorities call a hate crime says she's still in shock. Mindy Corcoran says her son, Reet Underwood, had already chosen to be an organ donor. Underwood and his grandfather, Dr. William Corcoran, were two of the three people killed in a shooting at two Jewish centers. Former Ku Klux Klan leader Frazier Cross Jr. is accused of killing them and another woman. And the moon will slip behind the shadow of the sun overnight. Just before 2 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow morning, the lunar eclipse will begin and most of America will have a good view. About an hour after it emerges from darkness, the moon will begin to turn a reddish color, becoming a blood moon that will last for approximately an hour. The next lunar eclipse visible to North America will happen on October 8th. And now your fascinating fact for the day. In the Great Fire of London in 1666, only six people were killed. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
I'm Al Presta. I thank you for joining me. Well, Kathleen Sebelius is now gone as Secretary of Health and Human Services. Her term was generally considered a disaster. And there are some who think that she tried to redefine Obamacare or nothing more than her own authority, betraying the rule of law. There are those who think that she's responsible for the rollout, which was a disaster. And I guess that's where I'd like to go with this, because, you know, she was on with Jon Stewart last year and did a terrible job. Her own staff thought she'd been sandbagged by Stewart, and the White House thought she was wooden and unable to defend Obamacare. And then, you know, this was a historic case, a huge change in the American economy, huge change in the way that we do health care. Or at least cover health care. And you would think that on a project this big and subject to so much criticism and with so many things that could go wrong, you would think that extraordinary attention would be paid to at least getting the mechanisms of signing up right. Because you've got to communicate to the American people that this is safe, and we are competent people. And she failed to do that. To me, this is inexcusable. Because you've got a department that's undertaking to reorganize the entire healthcare system. And this is where I would argue it has a moral obligation to keep trust alive here. But they didn't do it. American lives, jobs, savings, all at stake in this healthcare thing. And purely from a political standpoint, this failure is so stunning because from the day one of the website, it became the most public symbol of President Obama's presidency. So I'm surprised she stayed there as long as she did. Well, there's no love lost here. I wish her the best, but she was a strong advocate for abortion. She defended George Tiller. So I've got no patience with somebody who claims to be Catholic and maintains those positions. So that's done. All right. What else? CNN. CNN, I got up this morning, and CNN went on for at least 10 minutes without mentioning the Malaysian airline disaster. What did they have and said? They had the Ebola virus problem in Africa. The lesson was, watch us because it may kill you. Then they went to severe weather, which the lesson was there, watch us or it may kill you. Then they finally got around to the Malaysian airliner, which was, watch it, because it did kill them. Don't forget that the mainstream press, including the 24/7 news channels, are about entertainment. They are about arresting your attention. They aren't about elevating you. They are not even about trying to give you a balanced perspective on the world. Because if you take a look at the top five CNN stories every day, you won't find serious stories. I went over this last week. One day last week, I was talking to my wife and came on. Here are the top five stories of the day. See if I can remember what they are. One of them was the Ukraine, which, of course, is a serious story. Secondly, there was the Malaysian airliner. And I'll give you that as a serious story. It's a huge mystery. But then the three remaining of the top five stories were husband and wife want to sail around the world, but one of their daughters gets really sick, and life was threatened, and maybe those are irresponsible parents. Now, I don't know if you think that's a big story or not. I don't. I mean, it is for the parents, and it is for the kid. But it isn't for me. I don't know a whole bunch of people lining up to go around the world and taking their kids. So the next story was the president and the first lady go to a funeral down at Fort Hood. Well, I mean, that might be worth a notice, but to call it one of the top five stories of the day. And then the other big story of the day was the Pistorius murder trial in South Africa. I mean, why would that qualify as a major story of the day? It's a murder trial in South Africa. Most of us have no idea what that's about. Why would we spend our time on it? This is what I mean. It's about infotainment. And one thing Catholic Radio does is it generally does stay with things that are important. But we'll always come back to that because I think this is one of the areas of strength of Catholic media. We're not going to spend our days talking about the Pistorius murder trial in South Africa. Now, let's say there was a grand moral lesson to be learned from this murder trial. For instance, we did cover a murder trial. We didn't cover it. We dealt with it after the verdict of a pastor in the United States, and we spent some time on that because we talked to the assistant pastor who was there at the time of the murder and how he was trying to clean up the mess, and we thought that it was fascinating because here you had a pastor who committed an act of murder, and what did that do to the congregation? How do you keep people together after that? I thought that was a good story. I mean, there's an edifying component to that story. Well, anyways, but CNN, no. Just take a look at what the most important stories are day in and day out. You'll find yourself laughing at times. Oh, here's one. Here's a strange story. You've got the NFL now making cheerleaders available. They have an app that you can enter, and apparently if you've paid enough for your tickets, they'll send a cheerleader up to your seat to visit you. Now, I know many of us immediately think that this is about sex. I don't think it is. I mean, they're not coming up to do lap dance. Obviously, it has something to do with it. But look, this is about status. They're not going to the people in the chief seats. They're going to go up to the box seats. They're the ones who are going up to the chambers where, you know, machismo guys are hanging out, wanting to show off their stuff, show off their status, and getting one of the Dallas cheerleaders up there. Well, that's, you know, that's considered manly. That's considered a big thing to do. You know, it's novel. It's quirky. And, of course, it doesn't hurt that the women are knockouts, right? That doesn't hurt. Remember that song years ago? Just before, I think before I was born even. Standing on the corner watching all the girls go by. Now, that's not a particularly edifying song, is it? That's what this is about. You know, sitting in your seat watching all the cheerleaders go by. The major difference is that they have fewer clothes on than back in the 1940s. But this is, just think to yourself, what kind of life does the person have who sits around all day and tries to think about enhancing ticket sales for these franchises? And how can we get more out of our fans? What can we promise them to get more out of our fans? And somebody wakes up and says, hey, why don't we make the cheerleaders available to them? Wow, isn't that an idea? I mean, they've got another one now where you can pay more and get onto the field before the game. Well, you know, nothing immoral about that. But to spend your life sitting around thinking about how to maximize those kind of athletic experiences, I just don't see it. I don't think that's a life worth living, I'll tell you. Calvary men's movement, though, a lot good going on there, where the lesson basically is that a real man is a godly man. And what does that mean? Around the world, we know that men procreate, they protect, and they provide. For a Catholic, yes, that takes on, in the light of Christ, takes on deeper meaning. People want to know why men are not attracted to Catholicism. I think I'll offer an opinion on this. I think it's because most Catholic parishes make no demands. See, men know that they're expendable. They know that they're called to sacrifice. That's why it's always women and children first in a disaster. But when men come to a place where they don't care for the songs, they don't know much about the ritual, and they're not challenged anyway, they're not coming back. You want to bring men back to the church, show them the demands of discipleship. Show them that they're called to lay down their life in a real way. Put Jesus and sacrifice at the center of it, and I think you'll see men returning.
Republicans, Democrats, no matter which political party is in office, there are always investment opportunities to be found. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds won't compromise the moral beliefs of its investors. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. The portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and moral values. Call toll-free 866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com.
Schwartz Investment Counsel, Inc., a registered investment advisor established in 1980, serves as an investment advisor. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. To obtain performance through the most recent month-end and a prospectus, which includes objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com. Distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC.
This program is brought to you in part by the generous support of Siena Communications. With Siena, using your mobile phone helps the culture of life in America with no additional cost or effort from you. This year, Siena is changing its name to Charity Mobile to reflect its commitment to helping pro-life charities through mobile phone service. More information can be found at ProLifeCatholic.com. That's ProLifeCatholic.com. Charity begins at phone.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, your national and local online business directory. connecting Christian business professionals with Catholic consumers. Advertisers have taken a stand to support Christian family values in the marketplace. It's important to support businesses that embrace life and promote the gospel of Christ. And at CatholicBusinessPages.com, business professionals have taken that stand. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
Symbolon is a compelling video series presenting the Catholic faith and featuring top Catholic teachers such as Edward Shree, Tim Gray, Jason Everett, Patrick Coffin, Teresa Tomeo, Curtis Martin, and many others. Shot on location in Rome, the Holy Land, and other outstanding sites, Symbolon is excellent for parish RCIA, adult faith formation, or individual home study. Symbolon is available at Ignatius.com or at your Catholic bookstore.
Underwriting by Sony Pictures. From Affirm Films comes Heaven is for Real, based on the book about the incredible experience of a young boy's journey to heaven.
You saw heaven? What does it look like?
It's beautiful.
And his return home. This Easter, you can experience the hope of one family's story. Heaven is for Real, with Greg Kinnear, and introducing Connor Corum as Colton Burpo. In theaters April 16th. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. More information at heavenisforrealthemovie.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by the St. Gregory Retreat Center, a fully licensed and internationally accredited alternative to traditional drug and alcohol treatment. This model has utilized the latest techniques based on the most current scientific research. More information about the St. Gregory Retreat Center is available at 888-778-5833. That's 888-778-5833.
Steve and Janet Ray invite you on a pilgrimage to Ireland this September 29th to October 8th. Don't miss this wonderful trip to the Emerald Isle along with native Irishman Father James Conlon, pastor of St. Francis of Assisi in Ann Arbor. Joining in the fun will be Catholic Answers Live host Patrick Coffin and famous Irish storyteller Bat Burns. Visit Dublin, Galway, Kilkenny, and more, including daily private masses at holy sites. Find out more at WDEO.net and click on the pilgrimage link.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Dave Armstrong is a Catholic apologist, author, a convert from evangelical Protestantism in 1991. By the way, his story is told in Pat Madrid's Surprised by Truth. It's the chapter entitled Confessions of a 1980s Jesus Freak. And Dave's been published in Catholic Answer, This Rock, Envoy, and a number of periodicals. He's been on radio before. Dave's great contribution to the faith and to the field of apologetics, he's really part of that new wave of Catholic apologetics that grew up beginning in the 1980s and then moving into the 1990s and continuing today. His great contribution has been his writing and his website and blog, Biblical Evidence for Catholicism. It is a treasure trove of material. And we're going to talk about some of that today, because I think that I don't think Dave is as well known as he should be. And I'd tell you, this is, in my estimation, it's my favorite apologetics website to hang around on. Dave, good to have you here.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about your coming into the church before we go to the books and the website. You, by temperament and by background, were not really inclined to a kind of a high church sacramental view of things or liturgical view of things, right?
Yeah, that's right. I hardly believed in sacraments at all. I thought it was important to take communion, you know, but typical what's called low church evangelical,
mm-hmm.
sort of an antipathy towards the sacramental liturgical forms.
What tradition were you raised in?
I was originally Methodist, but that doesn't mean a whole lot, because
okay. yeah.
I didn't know very much, and I hated to go to church, this kind of thing. Then I became evangelical. About age 18, I had a conversion experience.
Now, that was, your brother had a lot to do with that, right?
Yeah, he was, my brother Jerry, be what's called a Jesus freak or Jesus people, the long-haired former hippie types.
Right, you know. Right.
And so he influenced me. Also, the movie Jesus of Nazareth in 1977 when it first came on, around Easter, right around this time of year. That was highly influential.
Really?
To sort of make the whole thing real. You know, you're looking at your brother, but it's not quite real until you really grasp what the biblical story, the gospel story, you
okay.
know.
So the biblical personalities come to life. There's a plausibility there that wasn't there before.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, it's like, Jesus is a cool guy. You know, he's got long hair and these silly kinds of things, but God will use that to draw people in. He'll use anything that will appeal to you. So.
Mm-hmm. So you, when you finally make a commitment to follow Christ, is that on, by yourself, or are you part of a community when that happens? What happened there?
Well, I was going to say, I was thinking about what I was going to say today, and I wanted to highlight one particular aspect, which is that I was a happy evangelical Protestant. I had no more thought of being a Catholic. I would have been, you know, walking on Mars or something. That's about how likely I would have thought. So the question is, how could I change my mind in the space of less than a year back in 1990? And the thought that came to me is because we all look at things through a framework or a grid, and that sort of colors how we interpret various facts of, in this case, theology, history of theology. So that's how I could change my mind, because God drew me in through history, talking to a Catholic who knew his history, my friend John McAlpin, sort of a local legend around here in the Detroit area.
Yeah.
So he drew me in by intellectual curiosity through historical argument. So, like, for instance, he said, we had these discussion groups. That's how all this started. He came in, another Catholic, and everyone else was Protestant, about 10 Protestant, and these guys are brave enough to come to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was an anti-Catholic, so I was open to hearing what they had to say. I respected them because they were pro-lifers, you know, that I had met. So John says one day, well, the Catholic Church has never contradicted itself in its proclamations of dogma, you know, what's required to be believed. So I'm sitting there, and I thought that was sort of like he said, well, the moon is made of green cheese or something, or a square is a circle. It's completely out of the, getting back to that framework that I was saying, it's outside of that, because the evangelical doesn't think in terms of church authority, that the church, you know, the binding authority of the church, or the infallibility it was as it was defined later. So that threw me for a loop, and it's got me thinking about it.
Hmm. Did you start reading anything by Catholic apologists at the time?
Not yet. What I did was I tried to, that soon became a discussion of infallibility, and so I went on the sort of quest of reading works that fought against that. So like Hans Kuhn, who's a dissident, not barely a Catholic at all. He wrote a book, I think it's called Infallible and Inquiry, I believe was the name.
Yep.
And Joseph Derlinger, who was a theologian at the time of Vatican I, 1870, who was excommunicated because he wouldn't accept papal infallibility.
Right.
So I'm over there going to the local seminary, Sacred Heart Seminary, reading these books to fight against the Catholic Church about infallibility.
Yeah, that's great.
But it was sort of dishonest, because that's another thing I want to be sure to say today, is you go into a inquiry, if you can even call it that, but my mind, you know, I was sort of doing polemics. I wasn't really seeking the truth.
Yeah, your mind was already made up. You were just trying to protect your position. Yeah,
I'm trying to go in there and prove that I'm right, and well, I'll show these guys how foolish it was to, you know, to claim that they never made a mistake, because I just thought it was impossible. It couldn't possibly be. So I gave my friends a hard time in this discussion for months. That was how I was approaching it. And then John tells me, hey, why don't you read Essay on the Development of Christian Doctrine? That's by Blessed John Henry Cardinal Newman, who's a famous convert from Anglicanism in the 19th century. So I read that, and it sort of switched my whole worldview.
Really?
it changed my whole, it changed the framework that I was saying before of how I looked at the same facts were there, and I always liked church history. I may not have known much about it, but I would have said that I liked it, you know, interested in it. And so it changed. I just read this thing, and it's sort of like you just laid on your sword because there's no chance of defeating it. So I was honest enough to admit there's no way that I could refute this thing. I thought I could refute anything the Catholics came up with. And so all of a sudden you just meet up with something that you have no answer to. And I could just change within a couple of weeks. It goes down to the authority of the church He gave enough argumentation in there with facts that I couldn't argue against it, and so I accepted it.
That must have put you in kind of a ecclesiastical limbo. If you come to accept the principle of development of doctrine, where are you going to be able to practice that apart from Catholicism or Eastern Orthodoxy, I guess?
Yeah, well, those are the two choices. Once you accept church authority, you're going against what's called sola scriptura or Bible only,
right,
as the only infallible source or rule of faith, as it's called. That's the big change or the sea change there, because you're no longer saying only the Bible is infallible. Now the church is infallible and sacred tradition.
Yeah.
And that's what Newman showed me. So it comes down to Orthodoxy or Catholicism. Basically, I mean, I respect the Orthodox. They're our brothers. But I couldn't handle their view of contraception. It seemed to be compromised. It's more so now than before. It seems to be it's weakened now. So that was my basis of saying, well, it's Catholic Church is the only other choice of apostolic church, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I remember those days because I was still pastoring a church, and you were a member of the church, and you ended up. I was pursuing the Catholic faith and getting ready to resign, and you went and became a Catholic. And I can remember that. I remember you coming and asking. I think you wanted me to say, trying to lay out some reasons you shouldn't become a Catholic. And I ended up saying, Dave, don't know what to say. I don't have any good reasons you shouldn't become Catholic because I'm thinking of becoming Catholic myself.
Your story just took about 10 years.
Yeah, I was real slow.
Mine was 10 months, and yours is 10 years or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now you had the privilege of meeting Father John Hardin, one of the great catechists, arguably the greatest catechist of the 20th century, at least the second half of the 20th century.
Yeah.
What was your relationship like with Father John Hardin?
Well, I mean, it was very friendly. You're sort of in awe of this person because he was such a holy man. He's actually, his cause is up now for sainthood.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's basically it was a way to be in these classes. It was Ignatian catechist classes. To be with a great Catholic man, you know, that was sort of the relationship. It was almost like Jesus and the disciples. There were about 12 guys in there and sitting around this table, and just he's giving this wisdom. It was just amazing to me. His argument or what he was teaching there wasn't directly what converted me, but it provided a sort of a basic education because we were learning different theology there in order to teach others. That was the idea of it.
Did you have difficulty from evangelical friends or family when you decided to become Catholic?
Not too much. It was a surprisingly small amount of that. There's a couple people, but most of them, I don't know if they weren't, the circles I moved in are not quite as anti-Catholic as like Calvinist Reform, because I was Wesleyan Arminian type thing, non-denominational. So I don't think it's as bad there for people thinking that you're going to go to hell or something.
Right, right.
They might think you're weird, but they don't. They still think you're a brother. That's how my friends seem to be.
Yes, and I that was my experience, too, that I didn't receive only a few incidents of people really being hostile. I think most people regarded my move into the church as with respectful perplexity. I think they simply didn't know why would he do that. But we'll come back and continue with Dave Armstrong talking about his coming into the Catholic Church. But we want to talk about his contributions as a Catholic apologist and his great website and his books, many of which I keep right here in studio.
The grass is always greener when you know how to take care of it. Jack here, neighborhood yard master. Honorary title, but I've been to Weingarten's enough to know that outdoor power equipment is not one size fits all. Why settle for a store that has power equipment between paint and plumbing? When you need a mower, tractor, generator, or chainsaw, go to Weingarten's. You can count on them to sort through their huge selection and find the equipment that works for you. Same goes for parts, maintenance, and repairs. They'll keep you running for years to come. From the size of your lawn to the size of your wallet, at Weingarten's you get the right equipment for your job. For seasonal specials and tips you can trust, visit them in Utica, Farmington Hills, Cedar Springs, Clarkston, and Ann Arbor, or online at Weingarten's.com. Better selection, better savings, honest answers. Weingarten's,
everything from lawn to snow. Did you know that our best intentions to help people sometimes actually hurts them?
So how can we connect our good intentions with sound economic ideas?
The answer? Acton University. A three-day conference in Grand Rapids, Michigan, June 17th through the 20th. A unique learning event that will help you not only understand what a free and virtuous society looks like, but more importantly, you'll discover how a free society must act, providing solutions that help, don't hurt. In 3 days, you'll design your own learning path from over 121 lectures and network with over 900 faith-based market leaders, students, and scholars from 75 countries and every faith tradition. Some of our speakers include Andy Crouch of Christianity Today magazine, Fox News senior analyst Judge Andrew Napolitano, Acton Institute President Father Robert Sirico, and Scott Hahn of Franciscan University. Learn more and register at university.acton.org. Mention Ave Maria at registration and get 10% off. Together, let's build a free and virtuous society that helps and doesn't hurt.
People ask me how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. I've been telling my friends about Visiting Angels, America's Choice in Senior Home Care. They're the angels who can help. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you may select your caregiver before service begins. For more information, including franchise opportunities, visit them online at visitingangels.com.
We all know people who tell stories or who are always so ready to feed others information, but you're never quite sure if what they're telling you is truth. When you repeat stories or situations, accuracy should always be your intent. Speaking truth means telling truth, no lies, no exaggerations, no distortions. In Proverbs 12:19, we read that truthful lips will be established forever, but a lying tongue is only for a moment. When others are obviously failing to be truthful, gently call them out by saying things like, "That's not my understanding," or "Is that exactly how you recall it?" We need not only to be truthful in our speech, but we need to encourage others to do the same. Lies perpetuate lies. We all know that God commanded that thou shalt not lie. A lying tongue is not only something God hates, it's also something that's an abomination to him. This has been a Christ Center Communication Message. I'm Vanessa Denhagarmo.
Are you tired of the way your faith is represented in the mainstream media? Stop getting your Catholic news from secular sources and get it from a trusted local Catholic source instead. At the Michigan Catholic Newspaper, we're Catholic, and we cover your Catholic Church in a way that only Catholics could. For the same reason you listen to Ave Maria, get the Michigan Catholic for just $24 a year by calling 313-224-8000 or visit themichigancatholic.com.
I'm Al Cresta. With me is Catholic apologist and evangelist Dave Armstrong, who is a longtime friend. In fact, David was in he and his wife Judy were members of the congregation that I pastored many, many years ago. Dave entered the Catholic Church before I did. But we were just joking about what we were going through in those days back in the early 1990s. Dave has gone on. He was a missionary and an evangelist prior to becoming a Catholic, and he's continued to serve the Church in that way, especially through his website. And let's talk a little bit about your work there, because I remember watching you were really committed to research and writing, and you were always good at collecting great quotes and focusing argument, and you would frequently publish these booklets that we'd collect and use. But when you went online, all of your material began piling in there. And let's describe the website right now, because I think there's probably more in this website than anywhere else I've been. If you want to get relevant material to Catholic theology, the Church Fathers, general Christian apologetics, as well as Catholic apologetics. So talk to me about the origins of the website.
Yeah, you mean the original one.
Then we'll get to the new one, so. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, like you said, I was already writing since the early 80s. I was doing research on different things, and like I was studying the Trinity back in 1982, biblical arguments. And so when I came online, which would be 97, which is, man, it's 17 years now, that material just went online. And I loved that because you could, I always say about the Internet and theology, that with this linking and capacity to organize, it's really wonderful for Catholic apologetics in particular, because our faith is so interrelated. You can always go in different directions. You know, if you talk about Mary, that could go to the Church. You talk about Church, it goes to Bible or different things. And so I just started, I put my older material on there, and I put my pretty much all of my first book, Biblical Defense of Catholicism. That online.
Right. How many pieces of work do you have on the website now?
Well, it's over 2,500. It's like 2,500.
I wanted people to get some idea of how comprehensive it is. 2,500 papers and books and articles and
Well, I mean, I'm amazed myself. How could someone write that much? But it's like day in and day out.
Yeah, that's what you do.
For those years, the 17 years online, and the last 12 has been full time. So I have a lot of time to put into it, and I write pretty fast. People say, "Oh, how can you do all that?" I don't know. I just write fast. You know? I guess it comes down to a gift that God gives you, or whatever.
No,
but it comes easy to me, you know, and I love to organize, so it all kind of come together with the website.
So this is biblicalcatholicism.com. Is that right?
Yeah.
BiblicalCatholicism.com to get to the website. Today,
that's the book site.
That's the book site. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's the book site.
The other is Biblical Catholic, and then the book site. The new one is Biblical Catholicism. So they're similar. You just add the ism at the end, and you get the new book site.
I'm looking at the announcement of it today, because you just launched it on Sunday, yesterday.
Yeah.
BiblicalCatholicism.com is the book site, and then Biblical Catholic. So let's talk about the books that you've written that have been published now. You've written a lot that hasn't been published, but is available on your website as e-books and PDF files.
Yeah.
Tell me the books that have been published and who publishes them.
Well, my most well-known is from from Sophia Institute Press, which is the Biblical Defense of Catholicism. The Catholic Verses, which was the next one after that, the 1 Minute Apologist.
What is the Catholic Verses?
It examines, it's tough to describe quickly, but it takes the arguments that how Protestants look at the verses that we think are in our favor, and it examines how they sort of rationalize them away or. So historic commentators, people like Calvin and Luther and guys like that.
So these are the uncomfortable verses for Protestants.
Yeah. I mean, the subtitle is Bible Passages That Confound Protestants.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
They don't like them that much because they sound Catholic or whatever. So that that was actually the editor's idea originally, and then I really liked it.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's very handy. Now, the one-minute apologist, that's yours.
Yeah, now that one takes 2 pages for about 60 topics, and it has a format kind of like the Summa by Thomas Aquinas, where it deals with the objection to it, and then it answers the objection and has another objection and answers that and gives scripture. It's supposed to be like a handy, you know, quick answer type thing.
Yeah. Very nice.
And then Bible Proofs for Catholic Truths is just virtually all scripture. I just collected it. It's a lot like a book called Knave's Topical Bible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I jokingly call this Dave's Topical Bible for this one. So that's more of a reference work.
So would you say, if somebody wants to start getting familiar with your work, would you start them with a biblical defense of Catholicism?
Yeah, because that's sort of like it's almost half catechetical, where it just lays out Catholic distinctives, stuff we believe that Protestants don't believe, and goes through each thing and gives some Bible arguments. And quotes the catechism, you know, exactly what it is we believe, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty proud of that, because I started work on that right after my conversion, all the way to the early 90s. And I was done in 96, and then it took 7 years to be officially published.
Yeah.
So that's a long haul.
It is. That is a long time, yeah. Now, are you... Can you survive on your books and your website?
Well, I've been doing it for 12 years with some donations, you know.
Yep.
It's probably like 2/3 book royalties and 1/3 or so people generous enough to support the work.
That's great.
And I've had some part-time jobs. Like, I worked at Coming Home Network for 3 years as a forum moderator. Then that ended like 3 years ago. Since then, I've just tried to keep writing and writing, hoping that it would sort of get to a place where it's self-sustaining, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And God is providing. I'm still here. I'm still working. So,
yep.
But this now the new book site, the idea is that I can get more of the royalties because there's no middleman, you know.
Right. Yeah.
It's all e-books. So those royalties come right to me.
How many e-books do you have?
You mean the formats or?
Yeah, you have.
Or how many?
Yeah.
The titles.
All
of them.
How many books? Let's put it this way. How many of your books are available online?
That would be, I believe, 41 out of 43.
Okay.
Because I have PDF, Mobi, Kindle, Nookbook, iTunes, EPUB, virtually all the different ones now that people use on their handheld devices and so forth.
Now, I wanted people to get a sense of all that you do and the comprehensiveness of the website, because there are other questions I want to ask you. You're also a blogger, and you really do monitor the debates and arguments that are going on the net.
Yeah.
What's different today than when you started online? Do you see much different? Is the Catholic apologist answering the same questions now as they were back, you know, when you first got online, or have things changed a bit?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I think I have an answer for it already because I've thought about this. The difference is that, at least where I sit, that the Protestant apologists, or the anti-Catholic ones, which are the most vocal ones, they seem to be less willing to engage Catholics. It's almost like I would compare it to the news TV situation where the conservatives look at Fox and the liberals look at MSNBC or whatever.
And they stop engaging one another.
Yeah, and they don't look at the other one anymore.
Yeah.
That's how it strikes me that how it is in a theological world. I used to argue with a bunch of these guys, that some of the big names of anti-Catholic world, like James White and different ones.
And now they
ignore me. I mean, I don't know what they would say why they do it. I think I know why they do, but they don't want to engage very much.
Why do you think they won't engage you now?
Well, I think that they've been bested in debate. You know?
I thought that's what you were going to say. I just wanted to hear you say it. So
no, I mean, we all think we win every debate.
Right. That's so true.
James White thinks he wins all his, so I put a book together of when we actually interacted for since 96, and he completely ignores it, so he doesn't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten letters from people that say, oh, I used to like James White, and I read your material, and now I'm going to become a Catholic. So I think he's scared of that. You know, in other words, don't let people become exposed to the other view because it's dangerous. You know?
If the big name Protestant apologists, or the big name anti-Catholic Protestant apologists, if they're not coming online, do you find many non-Catholics engaging you, even if they're not well known?
Non-Catholic. You mean like atheists? Or?
No. Evangelicals, they don't have to be big-name anti-Catholic apologists, just non-Catholics in general. Are they engaging you at all?
Yeah, I mean, I have a few on my Facebook. I have a personal page and also an author page on Facebook. And I have a Lutheran pastor there who's a great guy. And so when we talk, we usually talk about things we agree on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally I might say something about Luther that, of course, he'll object and give his side. But so the ones that aren't anti-Catholic, I'm not really concerned with arguing with them or, you know, showing that I do write stuff that I argue for the Catholic faith.
Sure.
But that's not my primary concern because I'm also ecumenical.
So right.
I'm trying to build bridges with people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the Orthodox. And,
so you're
but,
affirming.
I mean, I argue a lot
can,
less than I used to. What did you say?
Yeah, so you're affirming all that you can. Because the material itself. I mean, I think that, look, if you can keep the lines of communication clear, I do think that the Catholic argument eventually prevails.
Yeah.
I think you need to move, sometimes you need to move certain obstacles that are in the way. But
which is a classic definition of apologetics, a removal of the obstacle to clear the way to believe something, you know.
Now, I'm looking here. You have a book on Catholic converts and conversion. What is that about?
Yeah. I had some articles where I was sort of analyzing the phenomenon, sort of like sociology, which was my major in college, actually. And then I collected some old public domain stories, more collections of stories that people like to read. And then I did my own longest story that's in print, about 75 pages, where I also went into my original evangelical conversion and the whole story, which was fun to write because you sort of go through your life again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed writing that book because it was different from other ones.
Well, I hope people will take advantage of just going to see all that you've done, because I think it's really amazing. Again, give people the book site and then the big site. Go ahead.
Okay, well, biblicalcatholicism.com is the book site. It's e-books only, and we have bulk discounts, so you can save 33%, 40%, 50% if you buy 3, 5, or 10 or more.
And the other
and
site?
Biblical Catholic is the blog with the 2,500 papers.
Okay.
All kinds of stuff.
BiblicalCatholicism.com and BiblicalCatholic.com. Thank you, David.
Are you currently driving a car you don't like? Hi, this is Dale Black from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, and we can help. Please consider looking at us, especially during our award season event. I invite you in to see the all-new 2014 Cherokee, or get ready for summer with the 2014 Jeep Wrangler. Just because you want the lowest price and best value doesn't mean you have to sacrifice treatment. I invite you to be delighted by our professional staff. You'll be treated with the dignity and respect you deserve. Check us out at PinckneyChrysler.com, or better yet, come in today.
Hello, I'm Al Cresta, and I want to thank you for all you've done for the new evangelization and your partnership with us here at Ave Maria Radio. While our phone calls fell a little short of the goal this membership drive, giving in the mails helped to make up a good part of that deficit. You can still partner with us by going to AveMariaRadio.net and making a pledge. Thank you, and God bless you.
'Cause I am so glad you gave.
The following is a message brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan.
The Catechism teaches that faith is man's response to God and a free assent to all that God has revealed. Two of the great biblical models to the obedience of faith are Abraham and Mary. Abraham responded to God in obedience and trust when he left his home to a strange land, and he was willing to sacrifice his son Isaac. St. Paul called Abraham the father of all who believe. The Virgin Mary is the most perfect embodiment of the submission to the obedience of faith. She responded to God's angel with her fiat, "Let it be done to me according to your word." She lived that out through her care and love of Jesus. Elizabeth called her blessed among women. Let us pray that our faith in God will lead us to respond, following the example of our spiritual father Abraham and our mother Mary, giving ourselves over to God in faith. This message is brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. You know, there are many aspects to conversion, many aspects of how people change in their worldview and go through a paradigm shift. There's relationships, there's questions of authority. But one thing I'm convinced of all, I've seen many people move from unbelief to belief, and I've seen them move from non-Catholic Christianity to Catholic Christianity. And almost every time, there is some need for answering questions. Not always through the whole thing, but even if a person is coming through more relational areas, you're going to need good information to answer questions, and that's available at biblicalcatholic.com. We'll review some other sites next week. I'm Al Cresta.
In the Afternoon is produced and distributed by Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The executive producer is Nick Tom. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Old St. Mary's Greek Town invites you to visit us for celebration of the Holy Week liturgies. Both Palm Sunday and Easter offer full choral masses at 10 a.m. in Latin and at noon in English, as well as Maundy Thursday beginning at 8 p.m. Good Friday service is at 12:30, along with a concert at 8 p.m., featuring our festival choir, soloist, and orchestra, performing settings of the beautiful Stabat Mater. Easter Vigil will begin at 8 p.m., featuring the men's chorus. That's Old St. Mary's in the heart of downtown Detroit.
Here's some good policy from your local independent agent and auto owner's insurance. When you insure your home and car with us, you receive a multi-policy discount. And when you add auto owner's life insurance, you get a special discount on your home and car insurance. Auto owner's insurance will save you money on all of the insurance you already have. Now that's good policy. Auto owner's insurance, the no problem people.
Call TFC and Associates in Farmington Hills at 248-848-1900.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, your national and local online business directory, connecting Christian business professionals with Catholic consumers. Advertisers have taken a stand to support Christian family values in the marketplace. It's important to support businesses that embrace life and promote the gospel of Christ.